Welcome to this God-inspired message from Shofar Christian Church. Enjoy today's message. May you experience the presence of our Father, and may you grow deeper in your relationship with Him.
And this Sunday, I'm wanting us to just carry on from that last song. I so love the words of that song because it's so important, I think, that we need to remind ourselves often. In the midst of all of the leadership training that we do, and so often when we teach and we preach, I believe we preach the gospel and we preach Jesus. But underlining a lot of what we share is a lot of leadership training and equipping, empowering us to impart into the lives of others. And the danger in that is sometimes we can almost be so busy with the things of God, we forget about the God of the things. We get so busy with the stuff we're doing for Jesus that sometimes we just miss the fact that Jesus actually just loves us. He wants to come and be with us and share in our lives. And he'd love for us to invite Him into our lives because I think He deserves that, to be Lord and to direct our paths. So this evening I'm going to do something we probably don't do too often. You see, I don't even have notes just to make sure that I just stick to the word. So I grabbed a Bible. I grabbed a Bible at the info table. And if you have Luke 24, you can. If you have a Bible, if you have Luke 24, then you're pretty cool. But if you have a Bible, you can turn to Luke 24. Or otherwise, you can follow with us on the screens. And we're going to be reading an account of two men who've, for the last couple of years, had their lives turned upside down. See, this man came into their life. It was called Jesus. And one of my favorite moments in life is at the moment I've got three really, really beautiful daughters. And I was speaking to Carissa this morning. I don't think she's here this evening. And she's thinking about getting married and all of that. And we're talking about the whole Ebola thing. And I decided, this sounds like my daughter, if any of your kids ever would be interested, although it's going to be like a little bit weird maybe age-wise, but anyway, would be interested in my daughters, just remember, Lebola is not an option. It's a definite. It's not like an optional thing. You need to start saving now. I think it's a very biblical principle that if not Lebola, then at least some serious perks for having your family become part of our family. And one of my favorite moments at the moment is sitting with my daughters in the evenings, and I think I've told you this, reading them Bible stories. Last night, we were reading Bible stories, and they went and fetched, I don't know if it's just me or if other houses are like this. I love Bibles, so I've got like a stack of Bibles in my house and in my office, and we happen to have a stack of children's Bibles as well. So they went to fetch a children's Bible, and after about the third story, because the Bible I was reading, the pages are roughly about this side, and it's big writing, and there's one Bible story per page. And after about the third story, my one daughter, the eldest one, said, no, these stories are way too short. And she ran and she fetched one of the other children's Bibles where the stories are like normal writing on big pages like this with pictures in between as well. But the stories are longer and that worked a lot better for her. And one of the other things we do is there's a really cool app on some of you may have the YouVersion Bible app. They've got a kiddies one as well, which got really cool pictures and stuff. And turn the volume off, and I tell the story to my kids. So kind of we use the animations, and I tell them the story. The other day, we were talking about the birth of Jesus. And there was Mary with a little swollen tummy with a baby inside. And my kids get the idea of a baby being inside a mommy's tummy. My three-year-old came to me. She did something this morning, early morning, and I said to her, are you becoming a big girl now? She said, yes, I know. I'm almost a mommy. It's amazing what goes on in kids' hearts. But they get the baby and the tummy thing. And so here's Mary with a baby in her tummy. And Joseph. And they get the married thing as well because every Barbie story ends with Barbie marrying some prince. Fortunately, the prince all looks the same. It's the same actor drawn, just in a different story every time. So they get the idea that the apparently to their mind, the goal of life is to get married. And once you get married, then your life is made. There could be nothing further from the truth. As I always say to unmarried people, getting married is awesome. It really is. But don't think it's going to sort out your problems. As a matter of fact, it's going to create a whole bunch of problems you didn't even know existed. And they're glorious problems, and they're wonderful to deal with. But I see some of the married couples nodding their heads. But the guys are sitting, like, making sure their wives aren't seeing, they're nodding their heads. Getting married is awesome, but it's not going to sort out your life. Don't let anybody tell you that lie. But anyway, so there's Mary and Joseph, and the baby in Mary's tummy. So the middle one says, so they're married. I said, no, they're not married. But how can they have a kid if they're not married? And it was this beautiful moment of, in the middle of an awkward question, kind of, how do you explain that to a three-year-old type of thing? Explains that Jesus wasn't born like any other person. He was born different. That his mommy and daddy were not married. His earthly mommy and his earthly daddy. That there was actually something so beautiful that God came himself. And this is weird to explain to three-year-old kids, because you're telling them every kid put in the tummy Jesus put there. It's just easier. It's true, but it's easier than explaining other biological things to three-year-olds. But just the beauty of explaining to them, you know, Jesus was born different. He wasn't born like you and I were born. And here he lives for 30 years as a human, working probably alongside his father. Most interpreters say a carpenter, some say a stonemason, but he was a guy who worked with his hands for 30 years. And then one day he woke up and he said, sorry, Dad, your business partner is about to leave. I've got some other stuff I need to attend to. I'm going to go and talk to some people. You're making really good cupboards here. Keep making the cupboards. I'm going to go talk to some people for a couple of years. And then Jesus goes off and he starts sharing with people, and some people come around him and they start following him. And the Bible calls those people disciples. We sometimes make the mistake of referring to the 12 specific ones who followed him as disciples, but the Bible talks about the multitudes that followed him as disciples. Those multitudes, we don't know how many people followed him all the time. We know it's sometimes there were 5,000 people, not counting women and children, sitting there listening to him speak, and then he feeds them with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And this guy's doing amazing things, and people all over are following him. These big crowds. Then there's the 70, which kind of was those that he was really mobilizing and getting going. And he sends them out 2 by 2 into every town and village where he himself was about to go. And they go on the first Let's Go missions trips. And they go and carry the message of Jesus all over the place. And then there were the 12, which were sort of Jesus' small group, the group that he traveled with. They were everywhere with him. And then there were the 3, Peter, James, and John, his best friends, his inner circle, the ones that he confided in the most. And all of these have been following him, and Jesus has been doing some pretty miraculous stuff for 3 years. And then one day he comes into Jerusalem, and the whole city knows about it. As he comes in Jerusalem, he's riding on a donkey. They're chopping down all their palm trees. They're taking their palm leaves. They're fanning their palm leaves for him. They're throwing them on the floor, and Jesus is walking in on the donkey. Is a triumphal entry of everyone is thinking, here comes our king. The people in Israel in this time are living under an immense oppression. They're living in the city of Jerusalem, which is their city, if you could say that, under Roman rule. You see, they can't make any decision. They pay, but it's a bit like South Africa. They pay a whole bunch of taxes, and they really don't get very much for it. Because all they're paying these taxes, the taxes are going to the Romans. The taxes aren't coming back to the Jews. They're oppressed. They're ruled by another. So much so that when the Jewish religious leaders decide that we need to kill this Jesus, because that's what they did, they crucified him. They couldn't do that themselves. They had to go to the Roman rulers and state their case to Pontius Pilate. Let a Roman ruler make a decision around their own internal matters. See, they were totally dependent upon the Romans. And inside of them had been this hope, this dream, as they were seeing all of these miracles that Jesus is doing, that here is somebody who is going to come and set us free from all of this oppression. He is going to be the king we've been waiting for. He is going to set us free, and we're going to be the Jewish nation again, not ruled by anybody else but by our own king. And Jesus, he's the one. And as he's going around, he's doing all of these miracles. And you can imagine the discussions that are happening around dinner tables, that are happening in the workplace, that are happening all over the place. Have you heard? Did you hear what Jesus did yesterday? And every time he does one of these miracles, faith grows, hope grows, expectation grows that Jesus is the one. Then Jesus gets crucified. Gets hung on a cross between a thief and a murderer. Gets buried in a tomb. Amazing things happen when he gets crucified. He dies at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. At that moment, it's meant to be bright daylight. The whole of Jerusalem is covered in total darkness, and there's a massive earthquake. So much so that the person who sees him die, and in the moment that he sees him dying, darkness and the earthquake, he turns to his friend and he says, "This really was the Son of God." Jesus dies and gets buried in a tomb. And that's where we pick up the story about two guys. That same day in Luke 24, verse 13, that same day, two of Jesus' followers. We don't know which one of the groups these two had been part of. We know one of them's name was Cleopas, so they wouldn't have been part of the three. And a little bit later, we're going to see they weren't part of the 12. But they may have been part of the 70. They may have been part of a larger group. We don't know, but they were two of Jesus' followers. They're walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles. It's about 12 kilometers from Jerusalem. As they were walking, they were talking about everything that had happened, as you and I probably would have done as well. Imagine you were then. There's just been this 3 year incredible, amazing roller coaster, if you will, time of your life with this Jesus guy. Seeing all of his miracles, this crazy things that he's been doing. And then he came in, and just a couple of weeks ago, he came in on a donkey and everyone was cheering, it's the Messiah. And then a few days later, everyone turns around and he gets murdered and he gets killed. And the same people who were singing his praises are the same people who are wanting him to make, who are chanting, "Crucify him, crucify him." And they're talking about this incredible events that have been happening. And these two guys are walking along 12 kilometers. Everything that had happened. And let me stop there. They're on the road to Emmaus. We'll see in a few moments' time that they had a home in Emmaus. So here are two guys who have been in Jerusalem. They've been following Jesus for, we don't know how long, but a portion of the 3 years, maybe 3 years, maybe 3 months, we don't know. And a hope had been stirring in their hearts. And one day they woke up and Jesus was gone. They go back home. Maybe they had a guest house. Maybe they had a family business. Maybe there was something that they could go back to because this whole hope that they had for Jesus, well, that's not going to happen anymore. And they get on the road and they're heading to Emmaus. So you have these two guys talking, animatedly sharing, confused, don't quite know what's going on, but they know they've got to get on with their lives. And Peter went fishing and John went fishing again. And these guys, their life is in Emmaus. So they're heading back to Emmaus where their life was before Jesus came into their life. As they talked and discussed, you got these two guys and they're walking just outside of Jerusalem on the way to Emmaus. They discussed these things. Jesus himself suddenly came and began walking with them. But God kept them from recognizing him. So you got these two guys talking. "Hey, do you remember seeing that? That was amazing. Wow." They're having this conversation. A third guy comes and walks alongside. "Hey, where are you guys going?" "No, we're going to Emmaus." "Well, I'm heading that way as well. Can we walk together?" "Yeah, we can walk together. That'll be great." So they're walking, this conversation. Two guys and a new guy. A new guy looks at them and he asks them, "What are you discussing so intently as you walk along?" He says, "You guys are really having a really deep conversation here. What are you talking about?" They stopped short. Watch this. Sadness written across their faces. Sadness. I don't know if you've ever met somebody who's telling a story and they're heartbroken and you interrupt them, you ask them to tell a story and they look at you. You can see the pain on their faces. And these two guys, they had all this hope that they've placed in Jesus, and now he's gone and died on them, and all of this hope has come crashing down, and sadness is written across their faces. You see, they're not sad because Jesus is dead. They're sad because the dream and the hope that has been building in their hearts as they've been following him is no more. And one of them, Cleopas, replied, "Guy, is your cell phone broken like mine? Somebody somewhere, I don't know, cursed my cell phones. I don't know what's going on. I've broken 3 screens of cell phones in the last 3 weeks. So Yuri's going to have some business to do for me in the next while." Huh? But how's this for a deal? Yuri, if I tell them all, they must have your screens replaced with you, you're going to give me a special deal. Okay, good stuff. Just kidding. Pay full price. Bless the man. Okay. If I've got the money to pay for it. So if you can't, if you're trying to SMS me or WhatsApp me or whatever, just don't. Okay. My phones are all dead. They're heaping up and I'm borrowing phones and they're heaping up too, and that's a problem. Okay. So where was I? So you like Philip, you've just broken your phone, new guy, because your Facebook is dead, your Twitter's dead, your WhatsApp's dead, your Instagram's dead. Have, watch what they say here. Are you the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there the last few days? Guy, have you been living under a rock? How have you missed the whole uproar that this whole city has been talking about? If you were to go on Twitter, Jesus, but we don't know you, Jesus, so new guy, if you take my phone, just Twitter, see this Twitter thing here, it's pretty cool. Look at all these hashtags. Hashtag not the king. Hashtag crucified. Hashtag gone. Hashtag dead. Look what's trending here. Hashtag not the Messiah. Hashtag Pontius Pilate. That's the discussion in all of Jerusalem, and you've got no clue what's going on. How have you missed this whole story that is the talk of, it's the only thing anyone's been talking about? You must be the only person in all of Jerusalem that has no clue. And I love Jesus. I love how deliberate he is. You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all these things that have happened there these last few days. So he's casually walking along. These guys are like amazed by this clueless guy that's walking alongside them. You guys are having a deep conversation. What are you talking about? What do you mean, what are we talking about? Where have you been these last few weeks, last few days? All the stuff that's happened in Jerusalem. I can imagine his face as he looks at them. He's like, what things? It's exactly what he says. What things? Explain it to me a little bit. Jesus is brilliant at doing that. What is the question he's asking here? Is he asking them, hey guys, I totally missed out on all of this. My phone battery died 2 weeks ago. I can't charge it. The charger cable snapped. I'm like stuck with no communication. I've got no, will you give me the facts? Because I've got no clue what's happened. Can you fill me in? The newspaper guy stopped delivering. I just, my connection to the outside world was cut off. I don't have a clue about what had been. Will you just give me the facts? Is that what he's asking? No, not at all. He's not saying, hey, from my vantage, I was hanging on the cross. I didn't see any of it. Maybe you could tell me what happened. What are you asking? He's saying, what is your perspective of what's happened these last few days? How did you interpret? What did it mean to you? As you were looking these last few days over everything playing out in Jerusalem, how did you read it? That's the question. And look how they answer him here. What things? Jesus asked. The things that happened to Jesus, the man from Nazareth, they said. Look at the words here. Remember, sadness written across their faces. They explained to him. He was a prophet who did powerful miracles, and he was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. Implication? He isn't a mighty prophet anymore. He is not doing any more miracles. He's dead. He was a mighty prophet who had done miracles, but those miracles are finished. Powerful miracles. He was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people, but he isn't that anymore because he's dead and he's no longer with us. But our leading priests and our other religious leaders handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. Watch his words here in verse 21. We had hoped. Implication, we don't hope anymore. Right now, our hope is down by our bootlaces. We had hoped. We had hoped. What did we hope? That he was the Messiah. Messiah is an Old Testament term. It speaks about the one who is coming, the one who is empowered by God. In the New Testament, the same equivalent word would be Christ. Anointed, empowered by God. They're looking at this and saying, we had hoped. We had really hoped that this was going to be the one that what? Would come to rescue Israel. This all happened 3 days ago. Do you remember those moments when maybe you right there right now, when you have just come to Christ, maybe it was many years ago for some of us, when you put your faith in Jesus for the first time, and you know what? You were stupid and foolish enough to think that he could do anything. Do you remember those moments? You'd walk up to anyone and pray for them, and God was going to heal them. I remember studying and deciding to do computer science, which I've never done in my life before, and all of my other classes of my friends, when we were doing computer science, they decided, well, we're going to go to the class that teaches us to, this is the mouse, this is the keyboard, this is the on button, this is the off button, that's the button that you push and it opens a tray, which is a coffee holder. They went to that class. And we went and did the class on computer science, and never done computer science in my life, and I was sitting there. I remember the very first tutorial. I had the textbook open, sitting at the desk, had the computer open. Had the textbook open, had the program open, because I could double-click, I could open a thing. Computer, screen, it's working, great. Keyboard, looks like it'll work. Book, okay, let's do this. For half an hour, that was me. Book, keyboard, screen, book. Everyone else is typing away merrily, making things happen, doing all sorts of weird and wonderful things with their machines, and I'm looking at my book and looking at the screen. Eventually, I had to call someone and say, listen, you're going to help. I don't have a clue what the first character is to type. I literally don't know. I don't know what to do. No clue. So exam time comes around. Always fun. Live by a motto, great motto for a student to live by. Study as if you don't know how to pray, and then pray as if you hadn't studied. So I studied like I don't know how to pray, but I might have been reading a Mandarin book, you know. Didn't make any sense to me. I'm studying this book, the chapters, I know, got the theory, boom, boom, got it, it's fine, don't worry. I know which chapters to study. The only problem is it doesn't mean anything to me. So an hour before the test, something clicked in my head, and I realized, you know what? Another hour of studying the stuff that I've been studying for the last couple of days and hours really isn't going to help all that much. I've got a better idea, and I went and locked myself in our residence's prayer room. We had a prayer room sort of on the outside of the res. And I prayed for an hour. I figured, well, an hour of prayer might help because an hour of studying really isn't. Yeah, I was stupid enough to think that Jesus could actually do anything. I went and wrote the test and wrote a couple of things, and kind of as I was writing some of the stuff, actually, the questions actually made sense and was really cool. Got the test back and did really, really well. You guys remember those moments when Jesus... And then he comes along and he does these miracles and our faith grows and our hope grows. That's exactly where these guys had been. They'd been seeing, and Jesus was going to do the impossible because Jesus can do the impossible. Until one morning, they woke up and Jesus was dead. Has any of you ever had a moment like that? You had this dream. You had this hope. You had this thing that you knew Jesus was going to do. And then you woke up, and he didn't. Am I the only one who's had moments like that in my life? Those moments where maybe I should get on the road back to Emmaus because this Jerusalem thing isn't working out for me. I had these great plans, these great ideas. Jerusalem was going to be amazing, but you know, I've got stability and safety. I've got some family in Emmaus. Let's go back there. I had hoped that this was going to be the person. I had hoped that this was going to be the career. I had hoped that this was going to be the opportunity. I had hoped that God was going to be the one who was going to restore this relationship, put this thing back together, open up this door. I had hoped. And then like these guys, this all happened 3 days ago. We had hoped. Right now, we don't hope anymore. Don't know if you can associate with it. I've been there many times in my life. Then some woman from our group of his followers were at his tomb early this morning and they came back with an amazing report. They said his body was missing. And they'd seen angels who told him Jesus is alive. Some of our men ran out to see. I love how the book of John gives this account. Luke wrote as a historian, as somebody who's setting kind of in place, in order, the life of Jesus and the times of Jesus. And scholars who studied his writings say that he's a historian of the highest quality that's ever lived. The way that he writes the account, the way he's put this whole thing together, it's factually 100% correct. There can be no doubt of Luke as a historian. The book of Acts he wrote in the same way. But he wasn't an eyewitness. He wasn't an eyewitness to much of the book of Acts. He wasn't an eyewitness to Jesus. John, however, was. Do you remember the three, Peter, James, and John? This John had the most amazing name for himself that he uses in the book of John. When he writes about himself, he speaks about the disciple whom Jesus loved. There's the song doing the rounds. We sang it this morning. Some of you may have sung it before. The bridge or the chorus or whatever goes something like this. I'm not going to try and sing it because you'll all run away. You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. You know, sometimes we need to remind ourselves that he is a good, good father, because sometimes we had hoped. Can you imagine these guys walking, saying, we had hoped. Cleopas looking to the other guy saying, I wonder if he really healed that guy who had been blind and wasn't. Did that really happen? We were there and he fed us, but I can't remember now. Did we really feed? Did we really eat? And afterwards there were 12, but were there really 12 baskets? Did we really pick up crumbs or we just pick up stones in the baskets? Was this whole thing a big fraud? Because that's what Twitter's doing right now. It's just saying hashtag fraud, hashtag liar, hashtag not the Son of God. These guys are walking, wrestling with us. And then it's so important to remind ourselves he's a good, good father. And the second part of that chorus or bridge, it simply says this. What is it, a chorus or a bridge? Or is it the chorus? And I am loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am. I so, so, so love that, because that's the song that John would have been singing. You want to know who John is? He is a disciple whom Jesus loved. You know, we can say that over yourselves. You know, when you know who you are, you are the disciple whom Jesus loved. Before I'm Philip, before I'm part of the Bosso family, before I'm Afrikaans, before I'm white, before I'm anything, I'm the disciple whom Jesus loved. We should be singing that over ourselves, that I am the disciple whom Jesus loved. And here is the disciple whom Jesus loved, writing a book about this Jesus whom he loved. Just after he'd been crucified, some ladies went, because the ladies are always more faithful than the guys. They went to the tomb to go and prepare his body, give him the rites of burial as he should have had, because he was stuck in a tomb because it was late on the crucifixion day, and the next day was the Sabbath, and that starts when the sun sets. So they couldn't work on his body, so they had to wait for the Sunday in our terms. Crucified him on the Friday. Died late afternoon, couldn't embalm him and all of that. So Sunday morning, they go through to embalm him, and guess what? Jesus is gone. And there are angels telling them Jesus is alive. So they run back to the men, the 12, except Judas isn't with them anymore, so it's become 11. They run back and say, guess what? Jesus is alive. His tomb is empty. And then there's a foot race to get to the tomb first. And Peter and the disciple whom Jesus loved run to the foot race. Run to the tomb. And I love John the Baptist for this. Not John the Baptist, other John. I love John for this. I love how God, inspired by the Holy Spirit, John picks up his pen and he says, and the disciple whom Jesus loved got there first. Peter, I want you to know. Actually, Peter, you know this already. But everybody else for all of eternity is ever going to pick up this book. I want you to know Peter lost. I beat him. I got there first. Slow coach. That's a story bit that we read there. They said his body was missing and they'd seen angels who told him Jesus is alive. Some of our men, Peter and John in John 1, ran out to see, and sure enough, his body was gone, just as the woman had said. And I love Jesus' faithfulness. Because you know what happens when we get on the road to Emmaus? Jesus doesn't leave us and say, oh, cheers, guys, go, bye. Enjoy Emmaus. Emmaus is a good place too. Jesus sees their hurt and their despair. He sees their hopelessness. He sees the sadness written across the face of their faces. And what does he do? He comes and he walks alongside them. This evening, Jesus is coming to walk alongside some of you and some of us. And then look what he does. He corrects them, rebukes them, if you will. Verse 25, then Jesus said to them, you foolish people. You find it so hard to believe all the prophets wrote in the scriptures? I don't know about you, if you've done this yet, but if you want to go do a study about the Messiah, the anointed one, in the Old Testament, do you know what the dominant word most likely will be that you'll come up with if you'll do a theme study on Jesus in the Old Testament? The word you'll most likely come up with is the word suffering. Isaiah 53 is a great example. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. Each one of us have gone our own wicked way, but God has laid upon him the iniquity of us all. If you go and you read the Old Testament, that's pretty much what you're going to read about the Messiah, suffering and hurt and pain. And watch what Jesus, the new guy, says to them. You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe all the prophets wrote in the scriptures. Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory? And then the Bible study class of all Bible study classes in the history of mankind, and I want to get this DVD, I want to order it, download it from Dropbox, whatever, I need this DVD, because Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets. In other words, the whole of the Old Testament as we understand it today, which was the writings that they had, explaining from all the scriptures the things concerning himself. That's some serious Bible study right there. They had all of 12 kilometers to do it in, so they had some time. And here Jesus goes and he teaches everything about himself from the Old Testament. And you know what he teaches them over and over and over and over? He teaches them that the Messiah came to suffer. The Messiah came to lay down his life. The Messiah did not come to save and rescue Israel. The Messiah came to rescue mankind. Right there he says to them, guys, your plans and your dream for the Messiah was way too small. You think he's only interested in your little nation because you think your little nation is so special. Guess what? He's interested in the nations of the world. Read the Old Testament, it's all there. And that's exactly what Jesus tells them. He says your plan, your dream, your hope that you'd had in your heart for Jesus was too small. And you know what? It wasn't his plan. It was selfish. It was self-centered. You foolish people. And Cleopas and his friend are looking to each other like, who is this guy? He didn't have a clue what went on in Jerusalem, yet he knows the Bible pretty well. This is a pretty cool teaching we're having here. This is a really amazing guy. Let's keep him around for a little bit longer. So by this time, they were nearing Emmaus and the end of their journey. Jesus acted as if he was going on. He acted. He says, hey guys, I'm going to carry on with my journey. He's acting. Why is he acting? Because he doesn't have a journey to carry on. His only journey, his only appointment, his only plan for that day is I need to meet with those two guys because they've lost hope. They had hoped and they're hurting. And you know what hurting happens? Jesus pitches up. And he comes and he walks alongside them and he says, hey guys, I want to help you out of your hurt. I told you a little bit, let's walk past Emmaus. Emmaus is a good place. I'm walk with you to Emmaus and I'll walk on further from there because I'm going to the next town. Except he's not going to the next, not interested in the next town. He doesn't have an appointment. He doesn't have anywhere else he needs to be except with those two guys. That was his appointment. But they begged him. This is important. Stay the night with us. It's getting late. Sun is setting. It's dark. We've just been walking the whole... How long does one walk 12 hours, 12 kilometers? We're the walkers among us. Not speed walk, like casual walk. Sorry? 3 hours. Gareth's a quick walker. Okay. Fair enough. I haven't timed myself walking yet. But anyway, let's make it 3 hours. So they get to Emmaus. They've just had a really long conversation and Jesus just downloaded, boom, Bible dump in the best possible way on them. Everything concerning Jesus from the Old Testament. They've got it. This is pretty amazing stuff that this guy's teaching us. Don't you want to hang around and share some more of this incredible Bible knowledge that you have? We'd love for you to open the scriptures for us tonight. And do you know what? The sun's setting. It's late. It's nighttime. You don't need to travel at night. It's probably not that safe as well. There are murderers and thieves around. A few less now than a couple of days ago because we crucified a thief and a murderer. And they're not around anymore. But there's some other thieves and murderers around. And in the middle of the two of them was one, this guy who we'd hoped and had hoped. And the thieves and the murderers, they're around at this time. They're not a new phenomenon to life. So walking on an open road in the middle of the night by yourself, there's safer things to do than that. So hang around with us. Jesus acted as if he were going on, but they begged him, stay the night with us. It's getting late. So he went home and said, hey guys, we've got a really cool Xbox. We can play some games and you can walk tomorrow. That's a better idea. So they went he went home with him. And as they sat down to eat, and we're going to do this in just a few moments, he took the bread and blessed it. He broke it and gave it to them. Suddenly, their eyes were opened. They recognized him. And at that moment, he disappeared. At that moment, he's gone. And they're like, this is the craziest day of our lives. We've just heard this morning that Jesus has resurrected and he's alive, but we don't really believe it because our dreams, our hope, our faith, it is shattered. We had put all of our faith in this Jesus guy, and this Jesus guy is not around anymore. But let's go back to Emmaus. Do you realize the word that it used there when Jesus came to their home? They went home to Emmaus. Let's go to Emmaus. We've got a home there. We've got a life there. Jesus comes along with them. On this journey, they tell this new guy who knows nothing about the events in Jerusalem, they tell him about the events, and then he helps them out theologically. What does Jesus do in that moment? He comes and he brings his perspective on his mission. What begins to happen? What begins to happen is they begin to see the Messiah not as the rescuer of Israel, not as the one who has come to serve their selfish needs, but as the one who has come to redeem mankind. You see, all of a sudden they begin to understand Jesus all throughout the Old Testament was never about Israel, but he was about God so loved the world, as John writes later. God so loved the world, not God so loved Israel. He didn't come to set them free from some political oppression. He came to set all of mankind free from an eternity of oppression. And here he comes and he opens their eyes and in that moment he's gone. And Cleopas and his friend are like, where'd he go? Picking up the chair, looking under it. I don't know, David Copperfield was still around. Jesus, where are you? You're gone. Come back. Go look in the, there's none in the bar. Where'd he go? He's gone. But something has changed in their hearts. Because look what happens next. So they're sitting down, they're having a meal. They sat down to eat, he took the bread, he blessed it, he broke it, gave it to them. Suddenly their eyes were opened. They recognized him. If the ushers can start handing out the elements of the communion. And at that moment, he disappeared. They said to each other, didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us? And then what did? Did they go to bed? Finish their meal? No. And within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem. What's changed? Suddenly, we hope again. Suddenly, we believe again. Suddenly, we have faith again. Suddenly, we're on the road 12 kilometers in the middle of the night. It's late. It's dangerous. We don't care. Jerusalem is waiting. We don't care because Jesus, do you know what? He's risen from the grave. Do you know what? This hope, everything he said he was going to do, he's still going to do it. Suddenly he's picked up my hope. Suddenly he's picked up my dreams. Suddenly I'm not looking at Jesus through my own selfish goggles. Suddenly I'm understanding that Jesus has a plan for all of mankind and I am part of that plan and Emmaus is not part of that plan for me. So I need to get back to Jerusalem. So let's pick up, clean off our shoes, 12 kilometers. Here we go in the middle of the night. I don't care that it's late. I don't care that it's dangerous. I don't care that I'm hungry. Jerusalem is waiting. It's an amazing transformation that happens here in a few short moments. Didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures? And within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11, 12 minus Judas. So they're not part of that 11. Waiting, gathering together. And the 11 said to them, "The Lord has really risen. He appeared to Peter." And I wonder if that moment, if they just smiled. It really appeared to Peter? No way. That is so cool. Well, I wonder if they were. He appeared to Peter. That's amazing. Can we tell you a story about yesterday? We were walking on the road to Emmaus. We were trudging. Our feet were heavy. Our hope was gone. I was on the way to go and help my dad with our guest house business in Emmaus. Cleopas was walking alongside me. He was going, maybe he's my brother. I don't know what he was. But he's going alongside me. He's going back to his home. We had no hope. We were confused. We were wondering about if any of this stuff ever happened. We were wondering about Jesus was a liar. Twitter was saying Jesus was a liar. He's a fraud. He never was who he said he was going to be. We were confused. We were upset. And this crazy guy came and walked alongside us. And he listened to all of our story and all of our moaning and all of our crying and all of our complaining. And then he began to speak to us. And as he spoke, our hearts burned within us. And we realized something different was happening here. And we told him, come and stay over the night and we can play Xbox and he can carry on tomorrow. And as he was sitting around the dinner, he said, can I pray for the food? And he prayed for the food. And do you know what? Suddenly we realized it was Jesus. And he appeared. He didn't just appear to us. He spent the day with us yesterday. And then he disappeared. But do you know what? We believe he's risen. We believe he's alive. And everything that he said he was going to do, he is still going to do. And so we walked back through the night and our feet are hurt because Jesus walked with us. And I don't know if his feet were hurting, but our feet was hurting. Maybe he was just drifting. I don't know if he was even walking. I don't know how this whole resurrected body thing works. But my feet are worn through. But you know what? I'm back. Peter, he rose from the dead and he appeared to you. Well, guess what? He appeared to me too, and he allowed my eyes to be opened so I could see him. In a few moments, we're going to partake of communion together. And I'm going to pray one simple prayer over all of us. I'm going to pray the simple prayer that happened when Jesus shared communion with some people who'd lost hope. It simply says this. He broke bread and gave it. He blessed it. Took the bread, blessed it. He broke it and gave it to them. And suddenly, their eyes were open and they recognized him. I'm going to pray in a few moments that Jesus would come and open our eyes and allow us to recognize him. You see, in some of our lives, we're disappointed. We've lost hope. Maybe you're in that moment right now. You're here, but you don't really want to be here because Jesus dropped you. He didn't come through. One of my favorite passages simply says this, that even when I'm faithless, he remains faithful because he cannot deny himself. But there are times in my life when I look back and I think, Jesus, you were faithless. Jesus wasn't faithless. Do you know what was? I was selfish. I was thinking that Jesus was all about my plan and my agenda. And the reason that I lost hope was because I thought Jesus was interested in my plan and my agenda. And Jesus comes and takes all the time in the world and walks on the road to Emmaus with these guys. And what is his one message? His one message is that I am not interested in your agenda. But I have a plan. I have an agenda. And within that plan and within that agenda, I have a good plan for you. I have a hope and a future for you. I have a purpose for you. I have a reason for making you. You didn't create you here by accident. You didn't happen to be on this road. You didn't follow me these last couple of years just because I didn't quite know what to do with your life. So I said, well, let's just stick him there because we don't have a plan with him and he's just going to fall through life and be a loser in life and one day get buried and not have done anything with his life. So just let him be there because one more in the crowd will be cool. No. This plan that Jesus had, you and I have an integral part in the plan. And he wants us to be part of his plan. He is not so much interested in being part of our plan. And we get disappointed and we get upset and we get hopeless when we build our big plan and all we need. We've got the whole plan figured out. The spreadsheet is ready. The document is typed. The timeline, it's just one little Jesus moment is all we need for this whole plan to come together. And that one little Jesus moment never happens because it was never Jesus' plan. And yet Jesus looks at that. And do you know what he realizes? The hurt is real. And the pain is real. And he doesn't say, well, you just go off onto Emmaus because you're offended and whatever. Just go live your life. No, he comes and he walks alongside us. And he fetches us. And he helps us. And he corrects us. He listens to our perspective. And then you know what he does? He gives us his perspective. And suddenly we begin to think of the Messiah different. And he opens our eyes. And faith rises. And guess what happens again? I believe that these two guys, when they went back, they never, ever spoke these words again that went like, Jesus, do you remember Jesus? The guy who was a prophet, who had been approved, he was a mighty Bible teacher. No. We had hoped. No. This is Jesus. And you know what? He is a mighty prophet. Actually, he's more than a mighty prophet. He is the risen King of kings and Lord of lords. He's the Son of God who died but rose again. It's not that he was a mighty prophet. He is the Son of God. It's not that he was a mighty and a great high priest. He is the living high priest that still lives today for you and for me, and who has given his life for us to have life. And do you know what? The tomb is empty because he has risen from the grave, and all of my hope and all of my dreams, and all of my faith. And if anything good is going to happen in my life, I'm pinning it all on him again, because do you know why? I believe that he can still do the impossible. I am stupid enough to think that whatever he said he can do, he will do. But there's a maturity that happened in these believers. There's something significant that happened in their lives because they went back to Peter, to James, to John, to Thomas, to Bartholomew, to Matthias, and the rest of the 11, and they were not, hey, Jesus has come to make our life better. They were, Jesus has come to save the world, of which I am part, and I'm so thankful for that because he came to save me. Can we stand together this evening? You see, some of us, we're in that moment right now where we're on the road to Emmaus. I'm going to ask you for a show of hands. You know who you are. You had hoped you were here under duress, but hey, you've lost hope. Emmaus is a better place. This Jerusalem thing just didn't work for me. It was a great idea. I tried it, saw some amazing things, but I'm not going to carry on then. Jesus is dead in the grave. I had hoped. Some of you there right now, some of us were there 3 months or 3 years or 6 years or whatever ago. And we never really recovered. We still know Jesus is the King of Kings, but every time, just as our faith begins to rise, a little voice comes up, and he's not a good, good father. He dropped you then, he's going to drop you again. Jesus has never dropped any person in all of eternity. Sometimes we need to just come and ask him to do what he did with his two men on the road to Emmaus. He opened their eyes, that they may recognize him. Some of you have never been there. You at that beginning bit where it was all about Jesus can still do anything and he will do everything, and you hold on to that and you carry on there as long as you can. But know in that moment when it feels to you that your hope is shattered, remember this message and ask Jesus to come and open your eyes, to come and give you perspective, that we may see it not through our eyes, but through his eyes. Let's pray together. Lord Jesus, I want to thank you this evening for your word, which is living and it's powerful. It's sharper than any two-edged sword. Cuts the division of spirit and soul and bone and marrow, and it brings healing in the most intimately powerful ways. Jesus, thank you that you didn't leave those two guys on the road to Emmaus, because you don't leave us. You didn't just say, well, if you guys don't want to follow me, then don't follow me. Carry on with your own lives. You came alongside them. You cared enough for them, Jesus, that you visited them and you walked with them. You shared with them and you taught them. And for some of us this evening, Lord, as we've been sharing, our hearts have burned within us, not because of the words that I've been speaking, God, but because of the words that Holy Spirit, you've been speaking. Thank you for your faithfulness, Lord, to bring perspective, to bring clarity. And Jesus, tonight I pray that you won't only bring perspective and clarity, but that you, Lord Jesus, would breathe new life over lost hope. That you would breathe new life over broken hearts, Lord. That you would breathe new life over those who had hoped. Speak about you in the past tense, Lord. But I had hoped this evening would turn to, I have hope in Jesus. If I have any hope, it's all pinned upon Him. All of my eggs are in this one basket, and I've placed it in Jesus' hand, and I know it's going to be okay. Lord, I pray that you would open our eyes that we may recognize you in Jesus' name. Lord, even as you broke bread and ate it, reminding them in that moment that you had died, you had paid the full price on the cross. Lord Jesus, in the same way as we're about to eat, we want to remember the price that you paid on the cross. Let's eat together. And we thank you, Jesus, for your blood, which speaks, and it speaks better things than that of Abel, Lord. Your blood that speaks of life and hope and joy and eternity and wholeness. That you were wounded, you were bruised, you were chastised so that we could be made whole. And we thank you, Lord, that your blood represents all of that life in us. Let's drink together.
Thanks for listening to this message from Shofar Christian Church. We believe that you enjoyed your time with us, establishing God's kingdom and His glory in your life. For more info, call us on 012-362-1363, email us pretoria@shofaronline.org, browse our website www.shofaronline.org, or like us on facebook.com/shofarpretoria.